Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Welcome to the program. Thank you much for joining us as we come your way Sundays at 7 a.m. and p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m. We stream live at richarddugan.com and newspress.com, and we also archive the programs at richarddugan.com, the radio shows page. We encourage you to go to our guests' websites to find out what they have to offer for you in the way of the information that we share on this program. So don't waste any time. Click on the link that we have there. I have actually, as of 2016, taken the liberty of posting the interviews as we do them up on the website. So also, you also want to be aware that sometimes these interviews are more than just the radio show that you hear. Sometimes there's more. I can't tell you which ones because there are so many interviews that I've done. There may be some interviews that run an hour. They may run an hour and a half. We just kept on going. So you'll want to check that out as well. Today, we have a return guest. I'm very excited to have with us a woman who I helped to produce a meditation CD, but she's also an accomplished author as well. And she's doing other works that we're going to talk about. And Claire Candy Huff is my guest, and her latest work is One True Home, Behind the Veil of Forgiveness. Candy, welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to have you back.
Thank you, Richard. It's a pleasure to be here. Long time no speak.
In more ways than one, indeed. And certainly you have been very busy. You used to live here in Santa Barbara, but you have moved, if I'm correct, at least to parts southward. I'm not sure if you're still in Los Angeles, but you're transforming the lives of people that you come in contact with as you transform your life and move forward into the things that you're doing. And I guess we should let our listeners know. Let's talk a little bit about the work that you are doing now and where that has come from in terms of where you began in your, we'll call it spiritual or metaphysical vocation, shall we say.
Wonderful. Well, the work that I am currently doing as a through my business, which is Angel Healing House, which can be found at angelhealinghouse.com. For the past 12 years, I've been a Reiki master teacher, doing energy work. I'm an angel practitioner. I also have my own radio program, my international Angel Healing House Radio, where I bring forth channeled messages on topics of relevancy to the conscious collective, and also take calls from all over the world for people who want mini readings and intuitive counseling. First and foremost, I would say I'm an author, as I'm just about to bring out my third book, and I brought out this wonderful channeled book, One True Home, Behind the Veil of Forgetfulness. But this journey of mine didn't happen in, I guess, a usual way, as 12 years ago, the former soul that was in the body could not keep her life force energy going anymore. And we across the veil do not want to see people interminably suffer. And certainly in the last 30 years, it was so important for as many souls to keep their life force energy high and bright and of a high energetic vibration. And so I contracted, the angel in the body contracted with the former soul to have a walk-in experience, an angelic walk-in experience that happened on January 11th of 2003. So that's how this spiritual journey started, and was quite different from the previous 47 years to what it's been like in the last 12 years and all the synchronicities and miracles, to attracting my twin flame, my beloved husband Pete. 9 months after I walked in, we met on a Saturday and at a famous come as your favorite rock star party. I went as Stevie Nicks, he came as Elvis, and 5 days later he asked to marry me. He wanted to ask me to marry him after 3 days, but he thought he would wait for five, which I often think is really quite strange. And then our twin flame mission of bringing forth my books, our movies, our scripts, all of these things that are being seeded on the earth plane to bring about higher vibrational love and peace and acceptance and harmony. So that's a little bit about the journey. And certainly I am here as part of my mission to open up people, to challenge and change their perceptions of a soul entering into human incarnation. And it doesn't always have to be through a baby's body at birth.
So I know what the process is if one wants to change their address, that one wants to change their name, for that matter, if one wants to change their gender. But what in the world is the process that you went through? And if I'm understanding correctly, if I am addressing the, you know, correct me if I'm wrong here, but if I'm addressing the right person or entity, you are not the original inhabitant of the body when it came into this world at its birth.
No. She couldn't keep life force energy going anymore, and she didn't ask on a conscious level, as she was suicidal, she was anorexic, she was depressed, and she couldn't find her way to her back to her divine eternal nature, and she kept denying the light inside of her, and so she, her higher self, asked for help on an unconscious level, and that's where the dialogue would start. For an advanced spiritual soul across the veil to then contact this person who wanted desperately to exit their contract early because of their pain and suffering. And then if the person was 100% in agreement, this is not possession, it's totally from the earth person's point of view. If they want to exit their contract early, then an intersection episode would be planned. You know, many times we'll see, you know, the only person who walks away from a plane wreck, and somehow they're completely different. Somebody who's had a near-death experience, somebody who goes through a surgery, and they are very different afterwards. And that's basically what happened during a very deep meditation, where that soul, the previous soul of Claire Candy, walked out, and Angel Ariel, who is in the body now, walked in on that January 2003.
I'm curious if it was Angel Ariel, why no name change in that regard to differentiate? And again, this is the only vernacular that I can converse in. Why continue to connect with the old entity, if you will, or essence? Why not differentiate between yourself and the other entity that you were asked to replace?
I did this out of respect for her giving up her life and taking on the responsibility. Because when a walk-in comes in, they have the full memory imprint of the former soul. They don't have the negative emotional imprint. You know, they take on the loving and the positive and the bright aspects, but they don't take on the negative emotional imprint, which would stop them from stepping forward and doing their mission. So I decided immediately when I learned that I wasn't walk-in after 3 months of going through the characteristics and living this, even though I didn't know what the term was, that out of respect for her, and out of respect for her family as well, who may not understand the higher concepts and precepts of a walk-in experience, but this would have devastated her parents 12 years ago. And so out of respect for her, I have and for that, you know, giving me the chance to come back and to explore this mission of mine, I decided to keep the name.
And obviously, there was no real difficulty in, shall we say, starting fresh from a birthing process that you're sort of picking up in the middle of the body's existence here in this lifetime, if you will. But then again, you know, as I've often talked when people are conversing about reincarnation, ask a question, how many cars have you driven since, you know, you got your license? You know, because the whole point of getting a car, aside from all of the esoteric or maybe material aspects, is from getting to point A to point B. Well, that's kind of what the body is all about, too. And we change those over thousands and thousands of years, even though we don't remember. And we're going to talk a little bit about that as well. But that obviously didn't bother you in the least to come into a body that was adult. You didn't have to go through the angst, if you will, of childhood and adolescence and so forth.
Yes, but I must interject here and say that taking over the responsibility of somebody whose life has been so profoundly and deeply traumatized, and they're in such pain and suffering that it takes a great deal. It's like moving into an abandoned house. You don't quite know why you've come into it, but you know it has to be refurbished and redecorated from a physical point of view. I mean, she was living on 2 packs of cigarettes a day and lots of black coffee. So me coming in with this higher vibration, you know, I had to clean up the body. You know, I started eating organics and I started, you know, the times when she did eat, being anorexic, was junk food, you know, things with preservatives and flavoring and coloring and all kinds of additives and things like that. So from that respect, a walk-in would have to clean up the body. Second of all that she was associated with because of the negativity inside of her was negative people on the outside for the most part. And so to distance and break away from those things that are not honoring and respectful, that takes a great deal of effort. So before a walk-in can truly get on with their mission and be clear enough to step forth, and sometimes this takes years and years. I've heard from several walk-ins that sometimes it takes between 9 and 12 years for them to start in their mission. I was very lucky in that first year, I was able to start on my mission and study Reiki, and all kinds of things were opened up for me. But to say that just because we come in as an adult doesn't mean that we suddenly hit the ground running. We do have to clean up, because we take on the full responsibility, so we remember to feed the cat and call grandma on her birthday, you know, bake that cake for the PTA, whatever it is, get the car serviced. We have that memory imprint, but also because the person's life is so negative that we have to transmute and transform all that negativity into the positive in order for us to positively step on the path for our new mission.
I'm curious also what connection you may or may not still have with the former inhabitant and how that one is doing now. Have they reanimated a body in this reality, in this world, or are they still on the other side awaiting? Because obviously they must have taken with them the struggles, the challenges, the discomforts, and so on and so forth that led them to the choice to allow you to come in and take over, so to speak.
That's a wonderful, wonderful point, Richard. As a matter of fact, she was so traumatized by her 26-year abusive marriage and also a very deceitful, destructive marriage, not marriage, but partnership after that, that she, when she crossed over, she was not strong enough to go through that reunion and welcome home party that so many people meet deceased relatives and friends on the other side. She was not strong enough to go through her life's review, nor meeting with the etheric council and going over her book of life, her contract in her book of life. And she went straight to Spirit Hospital. And it's in Spirit Hospital where souls that are so traumatized and in such pain and suffering that they are wrapped in cocooned, they are sung the angelic language of light, they are warmed, and to bring their vibrational frequency up. It took 10 years in Earth time, which is a blip over on the other side, but 10 years of Earth time until 2013 for the former soul to be strong enough to go through her life's review. And there is much work that she needs to be done, that still needs to be done. And so she will be incarnating, but that's for her free will and free choice when she chooses to do that. My next book that's coming out, which is the sequel to One True Home Behind the Veil of Forgetfulness, which is called I Am an Angelic Walk-In, in that book, she started coming around me in December when the book was starting to be wrapped up. And she not implored me, but she asked very nicely if she could write the epilogue to the book.
Oh, wow.
And which I allowed her to do. And it's bringing me to tears now. And it's just giving me shivers. She wrote the most beautiful, beautiful epilogue to the book. You know, what happened when she stood before the Etheric Council. You know, she wanted so much to validate her life as to the reason why she left her contract early. And the Etheric Council looked at her with very sage, wise eyes, and they said to her, if you want us to validate your life, you're going to be here for eternity, because we are not here to validate. We are here only to acknowledge, you know, what experiences you had and what choices and decisions you made. And it's a beautiful epilogue as the finish to this autobiographical true story of my coming into the former soul's body. And it's about her life as well and what brought her to wanting to exit her contract early. How does a person get to that stage where they unconsciously just ask to exit their contract? It's a one-of-a-kind book, because I don't know of any book that's been ever written like this before. Mm.
To me, this is all very fascinating, and it ties in with so much that I read as I was growing through the processes that I went through back in my 20s and 30s and 40s. And trying to understand, I mean, especially after reading the works of Edgar Cayce and Ruth Montgomery, as well as some other authors as well, in dealing with this whole aspect of who and what we really are. And again, the whole concept again of it's just a new model car, but you are still the same individual or essence or entity, or if you want to say angel, what have you. You're just changing models. You're upgrading to the hopefully newer model, or maybe not the latest and the greatest, but at least it's something different. Now, I'm curious also in terms of both your growth as well as the
former soul.
The former soul. Thank you. Is there opportunity for the former soul to work through those challenges that they had in that body where they are now? Or is it only workable when we incarnate into physical?
Well, the thing is, and I speak about this in the beginning of One True Home, Behind the Veil of Forgetfulness, and also in I Am an Angelic Walk-In, the angel that I am, Angel Ariel, she was in service to the divine as a spiritual teacher. She had her own spiritual school on the other side, where all souls, whether they've decided to have human incarnations or not, they can go to spiritual school and they can learn different concepts. But it's very different learning something in theory than it is learning it in practice. And the reason that we incarnate on the earth plane is like coming in and having a double blind study. We may have chosen our parents, our circumstances, our you know, cultures, our ethnicity, the outline of our lives. But when we come in, it's totally veiled, you know, behind the veil of forgetfulness. It's totally veiled from us. In this way, we can have the truest experience. And it's through our choices and our decisions that will determine how that journey of our life or that outline will turn out. So yes, to answer the first part of your question, yes, we can learn wonderful things when we're across the veil. But yet again, learning something in theory and learning it in practice are two different things. And oftentimes, you know, if we tell a child, don't run on the sidewalk, and it's not until they skin their knees that they fully remember the next time they start to run, well, maybe that's not such a good idea.
So really, the bottom line is that we, as much as we as individuals want to help others to learn from our mistakes so that they don't skin their knee, if you will, it's not that, that's not such a practical solution, because people have to, in many instances, they have to learn from their own mistakes, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the, I take clients through something called the acknowledgement process. And many people who have done so much spiritual work in their lives, they still cathartically just begin to sob when they go through this acknowledgement process, where they acknowledge that they drew even the most abusive people to, and they contracted them and their contrasting characteristics to be in their life, to thank them for helping to learn their lessons in contrast, and also particularly to bless that person, no matter what they've done, bless them where they are right now, because where they are right now is where they're meant to be. You know, that's why judge ye not the Gigi, but ye be judged yourself, because we're looking at that person from our, where we are, mm-hmm. our circumstances, and that person, even if they can't find their way out of something, it's teaching them the contrast of what they don't want in order to find the light and to honor and respect themselves. So to bless that person on their journey exactly where they are. We certainly wouldn't want anybody to bless, to judge our journey and tell us what to do. But so often we will be the first to judge others on where they should be.
Yeah. And I know, too, that in my experience, I've tried to carry forward the lesson that that type of lesson in the context of allowing people to have the experiences that they have, whether they are conforming to the writings of a given book that their particular faith might follow, in my perspective, is irrelevant. They had an experience. You have had an experience where you have walked in and allowed another soul to walk out. And, you know, there, as far as I know, in the teachings that I have read, there is nowhere per se in modern tradition and orthodoxy, I'll put it in that context, that says, yeah, that's possible. Sure, you bet. No problem. Or for that matter, in the, again, the modern orthodoxy and understanding of reincarnation. But correct. You and I have studied enough, we know enough that the ancient wisdom teachings, and this covers everything across the globe going back thousands of years, they speak of both of these quite clearly. If we only allow ourselves, we open ourselves up and say, you know what, we need to consider the possibilities. And it certainly explains a lot to us as individuals as to why we are the way we are.
Yes, and in fact, in that book, One True Home, Behind the Veil of Forgetfulness, it's based on my five most important past lives. And the reason they were the most important is because I grew as Ariel, before I was Angel Ariel, I grew the most spiritually. It starts off with my life as a princess in ancient Egypt. And then when I crossed over, it talks about me going through my homecoming reunion and also going through my life's review and then standing before the Etheric Council. But then after that, my life in the afterlife and what I did until I decided to come back for another human incarnation, because nobody is forced to come and have a physical incarnation. And so when it was time that I decided to come back in and choose another different set of parents and circumstances and the era that I came back in, I actually went with the Etheric Council to my book of records, and I looked at my last incarnation as that Egyptian princess, and I built on the lessons I learned and the lessons I did not learn, and then I formed and fashioned the next lesson. The next human incarnation was as a healer in 14th century Scotland. And then I lived that life, and then I crossed over, and then what I did in heaven, and then, or on the other side, or across the veil, whatever you want to call that, And then I came back as another life, a courtesan. That was my favorite life in 15th century Venice, Italy. And then I crossed over, came back yet again as a captured African-American slave off the coast of the west coast of Africa, went through that horrendous middle passage to work the tobacco fields in Fredericksburg, and then crossed over again. And then the last life I talk about was as a member of the Lakota tribe, the American tribe, Lakota. And all of the spiritual wisdom that's obtained between each one of those lives shows such a different arc of the birth and death wheel that we're all on, and how we contrast to have that outline, and we contract to have those experiences, which when we have those experiences in the physical, we grow more than we possibly could ever imagine.
You know, there's a movie that I watched, I've seen it a number of times, Defending Your Life with Albert Brooks and Meryl Streep.
Yes.
And I find it fascinating, the character that Albert plays, when he is in there with his review, he's thinking so linearly, whereas Meryl's character is just having the time of her life. She is enjoying this review process. It's great. And Rip Torn, who is also in this movie, he's constantly reminding Albert's character, this isn't about judgment here. Yeah. We're just reviewing. This is nothing more. That's, you know, we're just watching, in a manner of speaking. And I often wonder if that is something that actually goes on, not literally in that context, but if after we pass, then we've got to go back and rehash this whole existence. And one of the things that I struggled with for a while back in the 80s and 90s with my where I was working, had to do with, you know, it is appointed to every man once to die, and then the judgment. Mm. And I came to a place in my own mind where I was actually able to have great peace in this, because I came to the realization that if this were to happen, I knew what my responses would be. Basically, all right, okay. I take full responsibility for my life. And if it didn't measure up, then it's on me. Mm-hmm. However, you created me, so in reality and in the final analysis, it's on you.
But.
So there is, so it's like, I take full responsibility. However, you're the ultimate one. You're the one who ultimately created me. Ergo, you're the final. You're the final one to be judged, because you're the one that started this whole scenario in the first place, and you're going to do with me what you will. I have no say in the matter. Ergo, let's just get her done. And I honestly, I actually took great peace in that, because it was like, either way, you know, it's kind of like you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. So I'm just going to resign myself to the reality, to, you know, again, in that context of teaching, that there isn't anything I can do in the final analysis. It's, you know, it's like, all I can do now in this life is live the very best that I can. And that's the only defense that I have, you know?
Well, and within that, even though we have been created, we have been given the blessing of free will.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in that free will that we are pure potential. Abundance is our nature, and we can change at any given moment and find our way back to that divine eternal nature of ours, which honors and respects ourselves, which have us making those decisions for the greatest good of ourselves and the greatest good of all. You know, so it, I guess there, you know, like you, there is no judgment. I mean, I've had two near-death experiences and the walk-in, and I clearly remember that when you do stand before the Etheric Council, there is no judgment. I mean, and also when you go through that life's review, like a holographic life's review of your life from birth to death, you know, nobody holds up scorecards. The Russian judge doesn't hold up 2.6, and the American judge doesn't hold up a 9.9 card. I mean, all it is you reviewing your life. And I must add here that, and I speak about this in One True Home Behind the Veil of Forgetfulness, that when you do go up for your life's review, and you watch everything that happened, you see how your actions and your words and your thoughts, you see the effect that had on other people. For instance, every time I was kind and sweet and loving, I felt how that made another person feel. I felt their feelings while watching my life's review. But not only was I loving, there were times where I was duplicitous, you know, I was mean, I was vengeful, hateful, and then I saw how my thoughts and feelings impacted on another person. Mm-hmm. And then we see that what we do for ourselves affects every other energy in the world.
And we're learning that more and more in this life, as we progress forward as a species in this reality, because it's becoming more and more evident. I mean, this has been something that has been shared with me over the last few decades in that regard. You know, not quite the concept of the butterfly effect, if you were to go back in time kind of thing, but more in terms of the current existing conflicts, for example, that are going on around the world. Well, micro inspect that, if you will. What kind of conflicts are going on in your world? Not externally, but internally. Mm-hmm. What challenges are you facing in your internal life, if you will, your inner life? And, the phrase, if you want peace on earth, then be the peace that you want to see.
Yes.
Ergo, if that's a true adage, then we do affect the outer world. And so until we go inside to do that introspection, we can't fully, and I look at it this way, we can't fully understand why these external things are going on until we understand why the internal things are going on within us.
Exactly. You know, my mother always had, and she still does, has a great expression, you know, sweep your own doorstep. You know, so many people want to go out there and save the world, yet they're not prepared to turn the mirror back on themselves and to see where they're still hanging on to sadness and anger and bitterness and resentment and regret, judgment, defensive, criticism. You know, there's so many things that you can do on your own doorstep and within your own families. You know, many people are talking the talk about love and peace and, you know, genuine harmony in the world, but their own relationships, you know, their own family relationships are so dysfunctional and so filled with regret and resentment and bitterness and hate. So it's, you know, really, you know, clean up that which is yours to clean up, then that will then go out, and indirectly and directly, it will touch all other energies in the world with that peace and that acceptance and that love. You know, when I take clients through that acknowledgement process, as I call it, you know, and then I get them to verbally thank the person in their life that caused them such pain, many of them start to cry, even if this person was in deep contrast to what they were and their characteristics. And some of them have stopped and said, well, why should I thank them, you know, for causing me such pain? And I said, well, first of all, you wrote them into your contract. You chose their contrasting characteristics in order to learn your lessons in contrast. And some of the best lessons that we learn from bringing to ourselves, as I did for 26 years with my abusive marriage, is that I learned tolerance, patience, acceptance, and forgiveness for somebody that was 180 degrees opposite from me. And these lessons do not come easy. And it's often when we're confronted with struggles and challenges that we, you know, that we can triumph over them and to see them from a very different perspective.
Claire Candy Huff is my guest. We're talking about a lot of different things, but especially the latest work that she has. She has another one coming out. We'll talk about that as well. One True Home Behind the Veil of Forgetfulness. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Stay tuned. We have more coming up.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and it's great to have you along with us, myself, as well as Claire Candy Huff, and her latest work is One True Home Behind the Veil of Forgetfulness. And we're talking about certainly a lot of different things, certainly, but it all ties in more than one way to what she is all about, what we are all about in that fashion, you know, those new paradigms for a new world. And we're looking for the choices, knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true, trying to find those new ways of living that will work for everyone. It is possible, but are we willing to do the research and the investigation and the digging to find those paths that can benefit every single human being that is here and that will be here in the coming, centuries for that matter? I mean, I've raised the question, Candy, sometimes with all of the stuff that's been going on and what appears to be the lack of growth and progression of humanity. Do we really have, and have we earned the right, do we deserve to continue on as a species since we don't seem to be getting it? And I think that the reality is more so that it seems like we're not getting it, but what we're seeing through the various outlets of information is that it seems like we're not, but by percentage, i.e. versus the population, it's probably not nearly as catastrophic as we're being led to believe.
This is absolutely true, because when I look at the world today, even though it appears to be worse than, let's say, 10 or 15 years ago, that's because all of the things that were hidden and not revealed from us are now being disclosed. In this time of higher consciousness, lies and deceit cannot exist anymore. And so as soon as, somebody says something which is a lie or is an untruth, immediately, because of technology, it's immediately found out and rightly talked about on the computers or things like that. So what appears to be a situation on our planet, which is worse, the bullying and the bantering and things like that, I actually see it and I compare it to an illness. Now, when a body is sick, it can linger for a long time, but until it's brought to a fever pitch and the boil is, brought up to a pinprick, and then suddenly when it bursts, then it can be attended to. But it has to be brought to the illness has to be brought to the surface in order for it to be finally brought to that fever pitch. And that's what's happening on so much of our Earth's and planet's existence nowadays, is what we're seeing is those lies and those hidden truths and all of those things brought to that fever pitch in order for it to be acknowledged, thanked, blessed, transmuted and transformed and finally released, because we're finally seeing that so many people are taking back their power and realizing that the power was within themselves the whole time.
Well, and it is true that we have always had the power. But again, we've been told that we don't. And I still, and I go back, I'll take you back 16 years to that particular presidential cycle And I remember and I know who the guy's name is, but the Democratic nominee. And I remember a speech that he was giving and telling us how what incredible things we collectively will accomplish. Da da da. And he ran down this great laundry list. And then he said, and here's what the government will do for you. And that's when I wrote him off. I said, no, you just undid everything you just said. Yeah. It is up to us. It always has been and always will be. And when we rely on other people, and there's a big difference between relying on other people, isn't there, and seeking support and assistance, if you will, from others. There is a big difference.
Mm-hmm.
That adage of giving a person a fish versus teaching them to fish.
Exactly. And it's because there's been an extraordinary shift in consciousness over the last even 2 years, 5 years, that it was the right timing to bring these books out, One True Home, Behind the Veil of Forgetfulness, and I Am an Angelic Walk-In. They present very challenging, in some regards, new concepts, and as I said, percepts for people to get their head around, things of a higher consciousness. And these books certainly wouldn't have found a home if there weren't people out there questioning, once they shift consciousness, that they're hungry for more information and more answers. So now that there is that shift out there, then now is the time for the material to be presented.
There's also a concept that's out there in regards to this whole concept of individuality, privacy, liberty, individual freedom. And when I take a look at the spiritual world, and this is not negating what you've said about free will, but when we are using our intuition, when we are listening to that still small voice, we're getting guidance for our part in the big picture, even though we may never see the big picture. The work that you're doing and the work that I'm doing, totally different on the one hand, but in total concert, it's like the gears meshing together. But each gear has a different position in the machinery and so on and so forth. Ergo, free will, that's one thing. But when I take a look at this whole aspect of that still small voice and the source thereof, it's not that I want to take away anyone's free will in that construct. But the truth of the matter, as far as my understanding, is that when you are following the promptings of the still small voice, okay,
mm-hmm.
that in you are using, yes, your free will to choose to do that, but at the same time, you're sort of saying, I'm willing to give up my free will to accomplish my part in the grand design, the big picture, the grand scheme of things.
Well, certainly we're here to co-create with that divine source.
Mm-hmm.
And when we listen to that small voice inside, that intuition, that we stop trying to figure life out, because life was never meant to be figured out, it was meant to be experienced. And when we connect with that higher dimension of ours, that higher self, that co-creative dance, that the universe will show us how to graciously and easily step forward for each and every one of us to action that integral puzzle piece of the planet that we all hold,
mm-hmm.
to help it grow, ascend, shift, whatever you want to call that. So yes, we do have that free will, but as I've helped clients throughout the years that have been pushing and controlling and with so much angst trying to live their lives, when they allow and they let go and they surrender to that co-creative dance to be shown how to intuitively step forward, then their lives start to open up in an infinite and boundless and limitless ways to bring about the fulfillment of their desires. You know, Richard, I often say that that we are pure pure potential. We are pure intention. And we were never meant to figure out the how and the when of life working out, because that's the providence of God and the angels. So once we focus on that pure intention of ourselves and the fulfillment, not the fulfillment of our desires, but our desires and our wishes, then the universe with that energy can then, God and the angels can then start co-creating the ways to bring about in miraculous and magic and synchronicities, because we've let go of the how and the when for the fulfillment of our desires to come in. But everyone holds an integral puzzle piece of the planet and is so important, because each one of us has contracted to come back and make a difference.
I'm excited about the prospects in that regard. As I say, we don't know what the future holds, and we don't know what the big picture is. And I've heard this phrase many times, you know, stop trying to control the process, become part of the process. And it's like you get to float down the river, as it were, you know, and enjoy the ride. I've never been tubing. I know a lot of people who, when the Salt River used to flow through Phoenix, they would get inner tubes and they would go to one end and they would float down. And then, of course, the big spring break thing was Lake Havasu and that whole area, and everybody would get into inner tubes and float down the rivers and so forth. I've never done that, but that is probably the best analogy of all, that you just let the currents carry you. Enjoy the ride, and hopefully somewhere along the way you get to, you know, you feel encouraged to just really maybe get into it more so.
Yeah, exactly. The song is row, row, row your boat gently down the stream. It's not gently up the stream. It's gently down the stream. And if you just go where life is taking you, which is not, it's not really taking you, but you're co-creating it. And it's fueled. The engine behind that is your vision, is your imagination, is your creativity, your enthusiasm, your passion. And that speaks directly with the energies of the universe. And once they meet, miracles happen.
If you've just joined us, we're talking with Claire Candy Hoffman. She is the author of a number of works, including One True Home, Behind the Veil of Forgetfulness. Talk to us about that home. I mean, I think, you know, people, we talk about where we come from, you know, from Phoenix, yeah. And I have no hometown to go back to, because it's not the way that it was when I left, let alone when I was the way it was when I was a kid growing up. It's changed way too much. But I don't think that that's the home necessarily that you're referring to. Tell us about home.
Tell us about home. Oh, home is actually, what I could explain and describe to you about our one true home pales in comparison when I try to use something as limited as the English language. But because that's what I have to utilize right now, I will tell you that when you cross over, if you expect to die, you're going to be sorely disappointed, because we all continue to think, to laugh, to experience. We actually breathe when we're in energy. It's not like we're physically breathing, but our life force still exists. And when we are so individual that out of the trillions and zillions of souls, we hold such unique energy that we are discernible from other individual energies. But when we do cross over, and so many people that have read One True Home, it's like no other book, because when they start to read it, they start to remember their own journey across the veil, as it starts to open them up to remembering their one true home. Now, after we go through the life's review and meeting with the Etheric Council, then we don't get a halo and a harp and just float around on clouds. We actually have the opportunity to do what it is that we love doing. For instance, there are different levels across the veil in our one true home. There's a level of where composers and musicians and artists go to be able to paint and create a lot of the things that are channeled. For instance, Paul McCartney picked up his guitar and there was Michelle or Yesterday. You know, a lot of things that are channeled to people on the earth plane, you know, consciously or unconsciously. consciously are created across the veil. There are levels in which one of the favorite levels for many of my clients are those elementals that love landscaping and horticulture and animals, where you go and you can tend gardens and be with the animals. There's the technology level where things are invented and then brought back down and channeled through many people on the earth plane. So, or you can be like my grandfather, who only lived one life, and all he does, every time I tune in, he's playing pinochle with his mates and with his friends, and he's smoking cigars. And that's we can do whatever we want, because you still have free will when you're across the veil. So many people who have experienced their one true home, near-death experiences, things like this, they understand that you can be creative, you can passionately explore what you would like to do, or you can just rest and relax and do whatever your heart desires. And if you should so desire to come back for another incarnation, you can go to the etheric council and you can sort of design the next life that you would like to come back, not just to take a stroll around the planet, but to grow spiritually. So there are so many wonderful aspects across the veil. And an 80 to 100 year life on the earth plane is about a 2 to 3 week blip of time across the veil, because it's in zero point. There is no time. So what we think is a long drawn out life is actually, just a very quick blip when it comes to being across the veil. So those are some of the aspects that we can look forward to, because we certainly do not die when we cross over, as we are divine and eternal.
It's a process that, is actually quite exciting to think about, especially considering the fact that if we're interested in any way, shape, or form in any kind of exploration, and I am, I find it fascinating. You hear the context, or I should say the phrase exploring strange new worlds and so forth. The ultimate world of exploration really is that inner world, and there's a great poem that I've quoted quite often. From an author whose name I believe is Tiberius, I think Charles or something like that. Anyway, having to do with the gods and they're struggling with this aspect of man, becoming so enlightened that he becomes like us, and it's plural. So they must now decide, where are they going to hide this? We've got to keep this information from man. Where are we going to hide it? And they talk about tops of mountains. No, they'll climb it. Depths of the sea. No, he'll dive. This place and that place and the other, and on and on and on. Finally, one of them pipes in, "I know. We'll hide it in his heart. He'll never look there."
Exactly.
And there is some real truth to that, in that that's the one place that, for whatever reason, we have the most difficulty looking into, and that is our hearts. It just seems like, there's some reason that we're afraid to do that.
Yeah. I would love to read this poem because it is so much in line with what you said, Richard. It was written by my father, and it's called "The Wisdom God Placed in Your Soul." Whenever you stumble or falter or fumble or fail to advance to your goal, take a moment in prayer and look and see past the despair to the wisdom God placed in your soul. When you're cut or confused and your ego is bruised and you feel that you're out of control, yet this feeling's not true. There's a you within you. It's the wisdom God placed in your soul. There are times you're so low, there seems no place to go. Still, there's one place you always can stroll. When there's nowhere to hide, you can just go inside to the wisdom God placed in your soul. In the silence, you'll find peace beyond beyond peace of mind, the courage to make yourself whole. It's a counsel unique that you don't have to seek. It's the wisdom God placed in your soul. You know, only few come to know that gratuitous glow from the knowledge of life's earthly role. Yet we all get to try to decipher the why in the wisdom God placed in our soul. And that's by my father, Leonard Milgram.
Mm, that's beautiful. I think that you know, it would behoove us all to take a look at where we are, where we want to go, take a look at our lives, and really tap into that. What do I want to say? Life's purpose that will really take us to a place where we can truly thrive and experience great joy and so forth, and also be of service both to self as well as to the rest of humanity. And if we can stay away from trying to change the world, because that is so huge, it's so monumental, and just work on our little changes within ourselves and ourselves, you know, in ourselves, we change the world, but it's through the people that we come in contact with. I've come across, Candy, I've come across a number of old sayings that I found are not true. And one of them is, sticks and stones will break your bones, but words will never hurt you. Well, words have power, and yes, they can wound the soul. And the other is, that you can't change other people. And I found that that's a lie too, because if you change yourself, and this kind of goes to what you were talking about in terms of your previous life, then you change the people around you. They're either going to want to get closer to you or get as far away from you as they possibly can.
It's true, you know, but the only ship that you can steer is, I guess, you know, the helm of your own ship in your choices and the decisions that you make.
Well, I think that you know, we have come a long way, and we have a long way to go, but I think that we will make it. And I know that there are a lot of folks who are extremely optimistic about our future.
Yeah.
And I want to stay that way myself. I don't want to get dragged down into the minutiae, if you will. I want to be able to know that, there is some hope for the future. We are going to be okay. It's not over.
not over by a long shot. And one of the things that people start to get so disillusioned is when they take themselves out of the present moment. You know, they start to say, "Well, what if?" And look at the politics, or look at what's going on and everything else. And I say, "Well, if you bring it back to the things you can positively affect in the present moment." And one of the greatest things we can do is positively affect our life by putting our emphasis on our blessings and the gratitude and appreciation for all the gifts that we've been given and the things that we can affect in this one nanosecond of the moment that we're in, the nanosecond of the now. Then it's not that things pale in comparison outside of all of those other things that's going on, but that we bring it back, and then our vibrational frequency will allow it to rise, to be blessed, to feel, you know, gifted. And that goes on and touches the world with the butterfly effect in ways that we can't possibly ever imagine.
Well, I would like to just express my gratitude for the time that you've shared with us here on the program. And, of course, we've talked about so many different things, and I think quite appropriately so, especially your latest work anyway, at least that's in my hands right now, One True Home, Behind the Veil of Forgetfulness. And for whatever reason, whatever by design, I guess, you know, we forget where we came from. We're beginning to remember a little at a time, a little here, a little there. For myself, I don't necessarily find myself remembering anything, you know, specific about. past lives per se or anything. There's just this awareness that I don't want to hear about the calamities and the traumas of the world, because they've been going on as long as man's been here, and I know that's going to continue on in some fashion. And as you've sort of elucidated, and it's not as bad as it seems. It's better than what we're being shown.
Yeah.
And that if I said this to my boss back in 1980-81, when I was working for one of the first or second stations that I went to work for, I remember saying, you know, that if I could do this, if I could volunteer to do this and know that I'd have food on the table and all these different things, I'd do this for nothing. Yeah. And there's a part of me that wishes that we actually could do that. And there are those who we've had on this program who've talked about those kinds of concepts where, you know, we're going to find a new way of, as I said, as we've talked about, a new way of new ways of living and working and being that are going to be so beneficial for all of us. But it is for all. I don't want to leave anybody behind. No one deserves to be left behind. And so it's that proverbial ladder that we're all walking up, and there's someone below us and someone above us, and the one above is helping us. In turn, we look down and we help the one below us up. So I thank you for helping us here on this program. And if you find yourself back here in Santa Barbara for any extended time or a period of time, we'd love to have you in studio to continue this conversation.
That would be wonderful. Thank you to you, Richard, for providing such a beautiful platform for people to come on and share their information and to tell their stories. So God bless you.
Before we let you go, I have three questions that we ask our guests. I don't know that I had the opportunity when we first did our first interview together. Mm. Who is Claire Candy Huff?
Claire Candy Huff is an amazing writer. She's a beautiful soul with a capacity to give and to help others to reconnect with their divine, eternal natures. And she's a little girl that likes to laugh and giggle and just have so much fun in life and bring along others with her glee and her excitement.
What is it that you hope to or want to accomplish through or achieve through the work that you are doing now?
Well, the main thing is that I know that as a spiritual teacher, I'm not here to teach anybody. I'm here to be an example and to shine a light for others to reconnect with their divine eternal natures so that they can enthusiastically and joyfully respect and honor their lives and live the most extraordinary physical incarnations that they can possibly live.
And finally, what is your life's purpose?
My life's purpose is to serve the divine, and I serve the divine best by serving that divine eternal nature of mine, and then with my gifts and talents and abilities, by nurturing and nourishing them, those things that God has planted in my soul, like being a writer, like being a speaker, and through my work through Angel Healing House, then I take that, and then because I've serviced that within me, the wellspring of a fountain then goes out to service others. And that's, I guess, the purpose of my life.
Again, thank you so much for joining us here on the program. And we encourage you, as we don't really need to, but nonetheless, to continue what you're doing and supporting those around you. And we are going to hopefully send people in your direction through angelhealinghouse.com is the website, angelhealinghouse.com. We will be linked to your website as well. And we'll also love to talk to you further when your next work comes out that you were talking about before.
Thank you, Richard. Yes, that book is I Am an Angelic Walk-In, the autobiographical true story of the former soul and the angel that's in the body now who walked in on January 2003.
And we're pleased to get to know her. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love Talal.